This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This week on RVER, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm sorry, I can't operate on that vehicle.
But doctor, you took an oath.
That RV, it's my son's RV.
Oh, doctor, isn't there anything you can do?
I'm not a miracle worker, Sheila. I'm an RV surgeon, trained to save the lives of large injured recreational vehicles, which is definitely a real profession.
When your RV really needs saving, Progressive has you covered. See if you could save with a leader in RV insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Covered subject to policy terms.
Hi, welcome back. This is That Millwall Podcast. This is closed season show number 7. We are back with another show straight after the Euro final weekend and also Millwall's first pre-season friendly. So there's a few parts again where we're going to Millwall, we're going to the Euros. But first, by no more least, let's get the show hosts on board. Joined, as always, by my regular partner in crime, the one and only Omar.
How did it make it? You all right? You good?
You're not too bad, mate. Not too bad. You were coming from yesterday.
You thought I'd be a lot more hanging today.
I thought you were going to be, you know, pleasing our American listeners. I thought you were going to be the drag queen again, but you're definitely not. So
I was well behaved. Well behaved.
Yeah, disappointed, if I'm honest to you, mate. So, yeah. We're also joined by the football guru, the one and only hungover for the first time ever, Kai. How you doing, Kai?
Yeah, I'm not doing too bad, mate. Disappointed about last night's result, but it's coming home in 2022.
There we go. So if we can just warn listeners, please don't do anything loud, make any loud noises. Kai is suffering a little bit, so just remember, treat him with delicate gloves. But listen, boys, you're obviously missing the Millwall. And I've got you a treat today. I found us a Scottish correspondent who was at the pre-season friendly, watched Millwall versus Motherwell. So without further ado, let's bring in Gary. How you doing, Gary? You all right?
Not too bad, mate. How are you?
Yeah, good, mate. Good. Nice of you to join us. Millwall fan living in bandit country or behind enemy lines. England fan as well. So definitely well within enemy lines. So gents, you're the football boys. You got a question for Gary about Saturday's game?
Well, obviously we played, didn't we? We won 2-0 against Motherwell by all accounts. I mean, Gary, how was it? I mean, obviously I see there was two sides, weren't there? There was a first half 11 and a second half 11 by the looks of things.
Yeah, game of two halves. The stronger side were out probably the first half. dominated the game start to finish. Important to stress, they were playing against a Motherwell side that had about six trialists in it. One or two that were no long back after being away on international duty. So wasn't expecting too much from them, but they looked very strong from the outset. They had a corner within about 60 seconds, could have scored within 60 seconds. But what was pleasing was the ball retention was better. Even though it was played at training pace, they retained the ball a bit better. And it was pleasing to see. It was good to see live football, actually, for the first time in about 19 months, it feels like.
Nice. Yeah, of course. I can imagine. I'm the same, obviously, with the Euros and stuff, being able to go to a couple of them games, just like feeling like the football's back and stuff. But I saw the team. It looked like in the first half, it was a back five. Is that correct? It looks like kind of same as it was last season a little bit.
Yeah. Ballard stood out for me as well. He was quite strong and quite assured.
Oh, nice.
I think Robert's going to have a problem picking his back four, back five, depending on how he wants to play it.
Yeah, nice. It looked like it was a 5-3-2 with Jed up front with who is it? A Phobie. How was a Phobie? Did it look good?
Yeah, again, hard to judge him for 5 minutes. But he certainly looked like it. Once he gets up to speed, once he gets up to fitness, I think he's a great asset. He was a nuisance.
Mm-hmm.
He looks powerful. And
yeah.
Good defences, a torrid time in the coming season. And I think his link-up play with Jed as well, I think that'll be crucial.
Definitely. I mean, it's obviously something that maybe we might see from Rout going forward. I think the first half 11, just for the benefit of the viewers, was Bielkowski, Cooper, and I think it was Ballard and Evans, I'm going to say, in the back three. In the back three. And then you had two wing-backs, Malone and I think Romeo. And then midfield pairings, you had Evans, Thompson, Saville, and then the two up top of being a Phobie and Wallace. So with the midfield, was it like a quite obvious it was like three midfielders in there, would you say? Or was one further forward out of the three of them have interest?
I think Como was kind of pushing quite forward, actually.
Yeah.
A few chances to try and score over his goal. But I think he's keen to impress. I was talking to him after the game. I said, we're all hearing the rumours, but nothing concrete. And hopefully he'll stay. Because I think, again, it's good to have a couple of young lads from the area.
100%.
Team. But he had a good first half. But again, it's hard to judge because obviously I think the benefit was just getting minutes under their belts more than anything.
No, of course. I mean, yeah, it was obviously pre-season, I suppose. But yeah, it's interesting to see, obviously, with the team there. I think, what was the goal like for Thompson's goal? Was it well built up? Or
Malone cross in from the wing. And,
nice.
I think he popped it in his head, actually. It was hard to see at times because obviously they were wearing training tops and we were a wee bit away from the actual pitch. We were like on a hill looking down. And as you could see from where we were behind the goals, there was actually netting up. There was like 8 foot of netting. So you could see the goalkeeper's head half the time. I thought, but the keeper had actually saved it.
Nice. I mean, Kai, you got any questions to come in with?
I just wanted to see how did Jed, Saville and Phobie link up? Was that because they played together before? So I just wanted to see whether they, it was seamless or whether they might need a bit of time to get going again.
I think they'll need a bit of time to get going again. It's only really a training game. They weren't really being pressed. It wasn't playing at a normal league match speed. But I think as they start to play and they start to have a better understanding of it, I think again it could be. They'll give some defences a torrid time. As Robert said at the end of the game, he might not be familiar with Motherwell, but Motherwell were a horrible team to play against at times. And coming out of the game without any injuries and unscathed was a massive bonus at the moment, especially so early on in pre-season.
The Scottish media seem to have been a bit harsh on Motherwell to have lost that game, didn't they? Because they had a good pre-season so far, because you start the season earlier, didn't you?
Yeah, well, Motherwell's team is full. I think the basis of their team is about five or six trialists. They play Queen's Park in the cup game on Wednesday night, so there was a lot of players probably being rested before that. Scottish media are very critical at times of teams. Motherwell actually played all right. They came into it again in the second half when the teams changed over the second half. Motherwell came into it a bit more, which meant they had a wee bit more of the ball, which meant Millwall had to defend. Created a couple of chances. What I will say is, George Long had a good 45 minutes when he came on. Called into action more or less straight away and was strong, had a couple of good saves. which would do his confidence a wee bit of good as he challenges the Batman for the number one spot in the season ahead. But I think, thinking of me, it was a good run out for the boys. Although we're tough, as I say, tough team to play against, and got the fitness up.
Oh, go on, Emma.
As I say, it looked like a obviously back five first half. I think second half, was it a bit of a 4-4-2? Maybe I'm trying to move to
bit of a 4-4-2 in the second half.
Yeah, I think because the team obviously again like was Long, McNamara, Wallace left back, I imagine Hutchinson and Alex Mitchell. How was Mitchell, the young centre half? Did he see much?
He was all right. He coped with everything that came at him. Because some of the young lads were in the second half, they were a bit on. They performed against some of these players. He was up against Tony Watt, who used to play for Celtic.
Yep.
And he done well against them.
Nice. And then I think for the rest of the team, it was Tyler Bury, Billy Mitchell, Kefton Beld, Mahoney, and then obviously Bennett and Smith up top. I think Smith was the one that got the goal, wasn't it, in the second half?
Got the goal. I tell you, Mahoney actually looked, he was excited. I got a text message from one of my mates. He knows somebody from Motherwell, and he said that Mahoney was a standout for him in the second half.
Nice.
Malone was a standout in the first and Mahoney was a standout in the second.
You chatted to a few of the players there as well, didn't you? Yeah. And obviously one of them who's just come back, Saville. How was he? Has he settled in? Is he glad to be home or glad to be back again?
That was one of the first things I asked him. I said, are you happy to be back? And he said, yeah, I'm happy to be back within the club. Excuse me. He was delighted to get it done. And I think what you can see what Rowett's trying to do is he's building a team. And he's building a good team spirit. All laughing and joking, walking out in twos and threes. There wasn't any individuals walking about. They were all involved. They were all laughing and joking, which tells me there's a good squad spirit coming in the season ahead.
I mean, obviously, you said you spoke to Rowett before the game. I mean, how was he? Obviously, how was he with you? And were they pleased that your fans come up?
Yeah, well, they were Rowett and Anne Barry had thanked us for coming down. I took my daughter, so she could see it just as a day out as well. And I think they were happy just to see some fans. At that point, it was only two of us, me and my daughter. But as the game started, as I said, there were 7 Millwall fans behind when the game started. But I think they were pleased to see us, thanked us for obviously taking the time out to come down, especially when it was behind closed doors. But having a chat with Gary, I think he was pleased with how the camp has gone. They like the facilities up here because they were up here last year as well. And I think that they were impressed with the facilities, so they were back up again this year, a wee bounce game. And I think he was happy. I asked him about obviously getting his business done early doors, and I think he was happy to get the business done early doors because that allows the players time, these new players, to come in and settle and understand what Millwall's all about.
Did he mention any players still coming in? Did he say that he's still going to be looking to sign, or
I think
is that it?
He's maybe hopeful, maybe another one or two, but he wouldn't tell me who.
No. you also had a chat with Bennett. I mean, Bennett seems to have fitted right in with the team now. He seems to be finding himself. I mean, how did you feel about him? How did he come across?
Yeah, very, very friendly. Taking time out. I mean, I could have very understood if they wanted to walk the opposite direction because of the COVID and the pandemic and all that, but no, it was a complete opposite. We walked from the changing rooms down to their hotel where my car was parked, just talking. We were talking about a couple of different things, talking about, like, ask me why I support Millwall, talking about my other club, Rangers, and all that, because they lost to Tranmere earlier on that day as well, and they were quite surprised at that. But again, very friendly, and everything was all jovial. And I think, nice. I think hopefully he'll come good because I think we need a striker like him just to put some goals in the back of the net.
What's your personal hopes and expectations then? Obviously, you know, we made some of these signings, like, you know, for going into next season. I mean, what's your gut feeling saying? I mean, I'm hoping that Rowett's always said about a 3-year plan since he's been at the club. And he said first 2 years kind of stabilised with table. And I feel like this is the year where, like, he's going to give it a good go to try and push us up there a little bit.
I think this is the year we've got to come good. I think, as I said to Rowett, we're a club that will always punch above our weight in the Championship simply because if you look at some of the teams that are in that Championship, they've been up to the Premier League, they've had the riches, and they still live on that budget. We're small time in that league. So if we were to say, if we finished fourth bottom, we'd always be a successful season. But I think now we need to push on. And I'd like to go top six if you're players.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. I mean, I'm kind of hoping for that. I just can't wait for football to come back, obviously, and be able to go to the games and stuff. Do you often travel down to London yourself or get to any games? Or
I can get to most of the games, some of the games in the north, a lot closer for us.
Yeah.
But I'm hopefully to try and get down this season a lot more than what I have done over the last couple of years.
Nice.
I mean, the thing is as well is that I think with the team, what he's building is that you've got the team spirit was there, which seems to be there. And I think that hopefully Jed and Saville can create what they had before. Obviously, we were speaking before, we were recording before the other guys joined. Is that I agree with you, Gary, that, you know, the way Saville left wasn't the best. And I think he sort of owes us something to hit the ground running. And hopefully him and Jed form that partnership again. And we can terrify some of these teams coming in, because I think the biggest problem we had last year, we were getting draws.
Yep.
And this year, I think we need to get wins.
Yeah, we need to transpose those draws into wins. We need, when we're in a winning position, we need to keep that winning position. And I think I'm hopeful this season that this is the season that we'll do something, because we came close a couple of years ago when we just missed out, and then with a season where we kind of towards the bottom end. Last season we had a good start, and then we tapered off a wee bit, and then we picked up again. But to get into that top six, we need to be consistent. So those draws need to become wins. Our home form is going to be key to that. And start hitting some of these games from away from home, we've got to start winning them as well.
Absolutely.
Fully agree. I mean, one other thing that you picked up on up there is that training kit is fucking horrible.
Seriously, like, whose idea that was, but...
Well, like, I mean, we were supposed to have had the new kit last week, but obviously, typical Millwall fashion, it's delayed. I think it's probably blamed on some courier delivery firm or somewhat. Probably didn't get ordered in time, but, you know, probably COVID coming. Macron, I think, is Northern Italy, so it's probably something to do with there. But, you know, the new kit hopefully is coming out at some point this week. But the white training kit don't look too bad. But the blue one, just, I fucking hate it.
It looks like something that my daughter would do in a tie-dye set or something like that.
Maybe that's it. Next season, we get your daughter to design a club with a tie-dye kit. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, I mean, I've not seen, this is probably the first season that I've not actually seen any leaked photos of the kit.
Well, it's funny because we were talking on Saturday. Me and a couple of lads were talking on Saturday. What a difference in behind the season in the club as well. The deal for Saville was pulled out from under everybody's feet. So we're going about our business the right way by keeping it indoors and only finding out once the deals are done. In terms of the strip and all that should already be done. In my opinion, that should already be released, or the prototype released. They obviously know what the strip's going to be like, so why not just give the fans what they want? Show them it, let them see it. And then tell us there's a delay because of X, Y, and Z, and then we can all get excited about the new strip.
I always think the new strip should come out either, you know, the couple of days after the last game of the season or the weekend after the last game of the season. You know, within 2 weeks of the last game of the season, I always think that that's when the new kit, at least showing you what it is, and then saying, you know, you can pre-order and it's going to be available from June, you know, because I think you need it. You need it available early so that people all over can get the shirt. So, you know, don't just aim for the UK market. Aim for, you know, you boys start your summer holidays earlier than us. Yep. Our kids aren't even on summer holidays yet. Yours go back soon. Ours don't. Then, you know, it's people around the world, everywhere else. So, yeah, to me, I think the whole kit release date is far, far too late. Yeah. It is every year. To me, it shouldn't be looking at the new season. When it comes out, it should be looking towards the end of the old season so that then you've got excitement and we can build through. And then, because you've got three kits, so realistically, there's a three-month break. Each month, you can have new excitement. You don't have to sell it straight away, but you can have new excitement.
Yeah, and you can get parents to, if they have got more than one kid, put money away until it comes out. I think that's something that frustrates me with my wall. The shop side of it can be poor at times, and I think they miss tricks half the time. to bring in a buck or two, or just promote it a bit better than what it is as well.
I think that's why there's so many people do Millwall shirts, Millwall t-shirts, Millwall clothing, etc., etc., because the club shop is considerably poor. I don't really buy anything from the club shop. I went in there the other week and they've got these England Millwall shirts, but they look poor. The England badge is not level with the Millwall badge, and it looks, you know, wrong. It just doesn't look nice. I wouldn't want to wear it, you know, compared to, you know, wearing another shirt. You're just, you know, you're more likely to go out and do that rather than buy one from them, because the quality side of it just isn't there on a mass-produced or a cheaper mass-produced product. I think once they find a good supplier, then maybe the quality will go up, but at the moment it's not. And I think we get a new kit supplier next year anyway, don't we?
Here's hoping something better than Macron, because the strips don't actually excite me at all.
No, and I think the problem we have is that unless we do... I mean, one of the things, here we go. One of the things when I was found on the board was that what comes to light is that a lot
Bingo.
Of these, a lot of these, a lot of these companies just give you off the shelf kit designs. So it's basically you can pick any one of those and you can have them in these colors. But other than that, that's it. If you want new designs and all that, then I think you need to be selling, you know, millions and millions of shirts, like probably Man United, Man City, Chelsea's, the likes, where they can probably choose what they want on there. But for us, it's pretty much pre-designed. You can just change the colours.
I think they need to. They've recaptured your fan base. The fans and the club seem to be a bit more closer together than what they used to be. Why not get the fans involved again like they did before? There was some really, really nice designs. And then at the bottom end of the scale, there were some absolute horrible designs. But
you mean the one that got picked?
Yeah.
We get hate mail from that one for saying that the yellow shirt was fucking horrible. We will get hate mail for that. Most people do. But look, it's good having you on, Garrett, and it'll be fucking damn rude for a lot of the Millwall faithful who obviously, you know, follow Rangers and want any insights into Rangers. Obviously you're a Rangers fan, so how are you looking forward to Rangers season and are you still on cloud nine after last season? And do you think you're going to carry on for this season?
Oh, listen, if we'd have had this chat a year ago and you'd have told me that winning the league would have broken a country as bad as it did up here, I would have laughed at you. But I've always been cloud nine. It was a phenomenal achievement from where we were a couple of years ago. Gerrard's come in and worked wonders. A little bit like Rowett, he had a 2-3 year plan. Had a wee few ups and downs, but this season's came good. Unbeaten in the league, disappointing in the cups, with an opportunity in both cups to win the treble, but they passed that up. Done well in Europe, so I'm hopeful with a couple more signings we can kick on and have a right good season again next year. I'm not going to make any predictions. As long as we win the league and do well in Europe, we need to get into the Champions League. That's where we need the money.
And as long as you beat Celtic?
Yeah, as long as we beat that lot.
How many times do you play Celtic in a season? Is it four, three?
Minimum of four in the league. But if you throw in the two cup competitions, you could have up to six, maybe eight, if it goes, depending on where you get it and if it's a replay and that as well. And it's not been known before that we have played them in the league four times. We've played them in the cup, went to replay, played them in another cup. But yeah, it's you never get sick of beating them.
For fans down there who've never been to an Old Firm derby, and we did an interview with Alex Ray earlier on this year, and Alex Ray was obviously telling us that when he played in it, he played through. He got really hurt, and he said the last thing you do is he said it was at Celtic's ground. He said there was no way I was going to tell these fucking bastards that I was injured. So I carried on and he had a proper injury. But he said that there is no other game really atmosphere-wise of a derby game apart from Millwall West Ham.
Yeah.
But, I mean, what is a Old Firm derby like for the fans who haven't been?
Starts a week before. The build-up starts a week before. It's one of those ones where workplaces will always be dominated with Rangers and Celtic fans. So you've got the build-up, whoever won the last game, or depend, obviously this season, we've had more bragging rights over them. Week before, you get the Monday, Tuesday, you have the normal, yeah, we're going to win. Middle of the week, the nerves start to kick in. And then come weekend time, it's the nerves are fully there. Normally starts 7 o'clock on a Saturday morning. Tunes on, baby flown, because we're not allowed to kick off any later than 12 o'clock in a league game. Since the infamous Battle of Parkhead in the Cup game, Milan and McCoys, a lot of the games were moved. So they always kick off lunchtime. They think it's going to stop trouble, but the game's finished at 2 o'clock. You've got all day, all night in the pubs. But it can last a week, and then depending on the result, it can last another couple of weeks after that.
That's the thing people don't realise today, that it's more than football, isn't it? I suppose it's a bit like us on West Ham, but it's on a different level. Rangers Celtic is on a completely different level.
There's so much goes into it, politics, religion, football, social issues and all that as well. So there's certainly a unique setup from it, and the only way to actually fully understand it is to try and go to a game at some point, even though tickets are scarce, and just take that atmosphere in.
And tickets are always scarce though, aren't they?
Absolutely, especially also now, because you've got 800 away fans in at Ibrox and 800 in at Parkhead, so getting tickets for the away end is hard. And even getting tickets for the home end, because then they go on sale to season ticket holders and stuff like that as well. So it's like hen's teeth.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Those of you who haven't listened yet, on the there is on our Twitter account where we've got an into the Lions Den feed, and you'll see the Alex Ray interview on there. Find it, because he talks about one time he needed a ticket to go to an Old Firm derby. Couldn't get a ticket. It was when Rangers were going to lift the title at Celtic's ground a few years back, and he had to go. So I think it was Peter Reid, Matt. I think it was Peter Reid, wasn't it, Omar? Yeah, Peter Reid said, "Well, I've got you a ticket for you're basically going to Sunderland's chief scout," and what he didn't, and he said, "You've got to wear suited and booted," and he went, and basically they'd put him in the Celtic end, so he's in the director's box, but on the Celtic side of it, and he didn't realise, and then halfway through the game, some geezer suddenly stood up and fucking recognised him and started having a pop at him, and you'll have to listen to the Register of the podcast to hear it, because Alex does tell a fucking good story, and the rest of it is on there. But yeah, Kai, you got any questions for Gary?
Not really. I was just going to know one more question about the game on Saturday. It was, did anyone play 90 minutes, or was it all? No, you didn't.
First half, it was 45 minutes the teammate put out. And then I think it was Bury came off for Bodvarsson about 70 minutes.
Yeah.
So everybody got minimum of 45, except for Bury, I think it was.
Yeah. Okay, that's interesting. I just wonder, because they did post something on their Twitter page afterwards, said 90 in the tank, and it put four pictures of players. I just wonder whether any of them, but I didn't notice, didn't know what they did.
For Robert, I think it was just a case of, and I think Savo and Bradshaw were actually talking about afterwards, I think for the next couple of games, it's going to be 45 minutes as the games come on, it'll be 45, and then it'll step up to 60. But they did mention something about Watford as their next game, because I thought we were playing Gillingham next, but he mentioned something about Watford, but I haven't seen anything.
Yeah, no, I've not seen anything in Watford, because I thought they were coming up to play Callum Davison's team.
Yeah.
But they have, and maybe that changed because they're in Europe this year, aren't they?
Yeah, I think they start next week or the week after, so I think their preparations would change. I actually thought, we'd actually heard it was maybe Hearts and St Johnstone were looking to play, but maybe England being in the final last night maybe changed their plans.
Yeah,
back home and obviously sample a bit of the atmosphere back home. Maybe they changed their plans, I don't know. But there was talk about two games.
Yeah, I saw that Billy Taylor, the head of communication, was at the game last night, with a couple of other Millwall fans. I think there was a picture on social media, with them all together. So, yeah, mate, I don't know if Billy was in Scotland or not, but if he was, then obviously at least they got back in time for the final. So yeah, but look, Gary, you've been a star. I think if we get any more Scottish pre-season friendlies. I think we'll come back to you. But also, if you're up for it, mate, it's not that bad, is it? It's easy to do. But if you're up for it, we'll get you on throughout the season, mate. And it'd be good to get your views, especially on some of the away games and stuff like that. We'll get you back on the chat mill wall.
Absolutely. Keep in touch.
Well. Yeah, no, definitely. All right, well, look, that's it. That's end of part one. We will be back after this short interlude. So, and then we'll be talking Euros, England, and everything what seemed to have happened on a Sunday night. So, after this, we'll be right.
Membership fees apply after free trial. Cancel any time.
Can I be real with you for a second? That goal you have to exercise and eat better? You really can do it, but nobody is going to do it for you. Nobody is going to push you out of bed to work out. Nobody is going to make you eat better. But here's the thing. Nobody has to, because you can do it if you have the right tools and a community that cares about helping you get results. And that's us, Beachbody. 2.5 million people, each doing the Beachbody program that fits our own goals. Over 80 to choose from. Some that take just 20 minutes a day. Nutrition plans that teach you how to eat healthy and still enjoy food. What we all have in common is we know it's not easy, so we help each other. It's as convenient as your TV or laptop, but you need to decide that you're worth it. That's why I'm inviting you to try our amazing Beachbody fitness and nutrition programs. Let us help you succeed. Here's how. Go to Beachbody.com to claim your free membership and start feeling great.
You might think most banks are the same. At Premise, we agree, and we don't like it. Most banks have been given a pass, and we wondered why. Then, we wondered why not. Why not cut red tape? Why not offer actually free checking? Why not send a driver to you? Yeah, literally to your door. Premise is here to be different and be the first bank to get it right. Welcome to banking as it should be. Visit PremiseBank.com to see how. Member FDIC.
Back. Welcome back. This is part two. This is where we're going to talk all about England, put all the wrongs to rights and fucking bitch and moan and everything else about last night, the tournament, and everything else. So welcome back. This is part two. England, then. We fucked it again. You were there, Omar. How was it?
Yeah. On the pitch or off the pitch? Which one do you want first?
Let's go off the pitch to a degree with atmosphere. I mean, The atmosphere on the telly sounded a bit flat compared to how it was previous games.
I did feel that yesterday as well, to be fair. I think, it's a culmination of off the pitch and on the pitch with this statement, but I think we scored too early last night. And we scored obviously a couple of minutes in. I know, obviously we scored a goal, whatever, but as soon as we had that goal, it was something to hold on for. And then naturally the team dropped deeper and deeper and deeper as the game went on. And that then caused, I think, a lot of the flatness in the crowd. Even I myself, I was like, I was just a nervous wreck for the whole second half, yesterday, thinking, can we hold on? And that's the problem. We were holding on when we should have maybe tried to go for a second or third if we was lucky enough to get out of position. But yeah, I'm gutted. I really am. And yeah, it was one of those days where I look back with pride and remember it forever. But you got to be grateful for what we had, but it's such a missed opportunity after what could have been, really.
No, I agree. And I think being a Millwall fan, it trains you into these sort of games. Definitely. You know, you never expect anything until that final whistle's blown. So, you know, everyone's sitting there, disappointed. To be fair, yeah, we wanted a win. Yes, we were positive we wanted a win. But deep down, we knew that we were going to end up doing something like this. And I'm not being funny. You score against the Italians within the first 2 minutes and then you sit back. All you're going to do is give the Italians time and time and time to break you down. And they will break you down eventually. Yeah. You know, you should have just gone out. You scored one, gone, right, let's go for another one or two. Go into half-time at 3-0 up. Then we would have really rattled the Italians. Then we'd have probably seen a masterclass from their manager to try and get them back in the game. And then gone the penalties would have been superb. But once you just sit back on the Italians, I mean, what was the stats? 34% possession overall? You can't do that. The Italians are going to eat you up. I'm surprised they didn't score more, to be fair.
They're a good ball-playing team. That's you're playing into their hands, really, when you've got the likes of Jorginho in there, who plays for Chelsea, just he ticks the game over, just does it with consummate ease. And yeah, I mean, they did deserve their goals to get back in the game. And yeah, like I said, like, I don't begrudge Southgate, to be honest. You know, hindsight is obviously a powerful thing, but got to be thankful for getting to a final, I suppose. It's just, yeah, it's a massively lost opportunity that, you know, could have been something. And of course, it's got to be fucking penalties that do us, do you know what I mean? And yeah.
Well, we'll come to the penalties in a little bit, but Kai, what was your views of last night's game in the 90 minutes?
First half, I was really pleased with the first half. I thought halftime came at a good point. You know, and that goal early was just such... I think it just gave every single person in the country just that hope, didn't it, that we were going to go on and do the job. And unfortunately, we obviously didn't in the end. But we started really, really well. I saw the press conference from Gareth Southgate, and you know, I think the system worked really well to begin with. The wing-backs really wide, and Trippier put that ball in. Because personally for me, I was, you know, having to go at him for not putting it in quick enough. But the way he waited for Shaw at the back post to arrive was really, really clever. But halftime came at a good point, and I thought, you know what, we're going to come on here and we'll change our tactics, maybe bring someone on or do something, because I felt like the game went a bit flat towards halftime. But just sitting in and letting the Italians come at us for the second half, well, you know, it wasn't the prettiest goal that they scored, but, you know, they won't mind, and it was going to happen eventually if we kept sitting in. But yes, yeah, so I'm really disappointed that we couldn't win it in 90 minutes. But yeah, you know, altogether, you have to feel proud of the players for the journey they've been on. But yeah, disappointed in the end.
This is how I see it, right? The Italians were a team to be beat. We could have beaten them, I think, if we had played slightly different. I think we could have had them. They were a good team. They are a good team. They're 33 games unbeaten. We can't take that away from them. They are a good team. But there was games what they played. Austria, who took it to them. And then obviously, who did they play the last one before we'd done the same? Spain. Spain again took it to them, and they looked uneasy.
Belgium too, they had in the quarterfinal. The run they had, like, you got to give them credit. Like, they deserve it.
They're good, but I just think possibly on the night, and again, it's probably not that popular decision, you know, comment, but I just think Southgate got his tactics slightly wrong. I think he went in with, you know, we'll sit back and we'll be able to hold it up, our players, blah, blah, blah. But the Italians, you can't do it. But take that aside, what Southgate and the England team has done over the last, six weeks, is probably changed the face of England forever going forward. We've united as a country. We've had more interaction with players. We feel as if we know the players more. The press, the media team, the whole lot considering around the England setup, the FA, et cetera, I think has given us a good insight into how the team works together, everything else. But again, we just don't seem to be able to finish that final point. And, well, you know,
yeah, but Mickey, like, put it this way, if Rashford tucks that penalty away and we're 3-2 up with 2 to go, I'm not suggesting then Sancho and Saka then go on to score their goals. But it's just fine margin to them. We would be on this show right now, jubilant as ever, delighted as ever, and we'd be going, Southgate, you're the one. And he is still the one. But
I don't disagree with that. I think he is.
The thing is, though, like, your point about game, like, how the tactics and stuff, I think he got it right. I think the only thing I'll lament him for is putting a 19-year-old on the fifth penalty. That's the only thing I'll put him for.
Definitely. 100%.
And also Sancho as well. I mean, like, obviously, he's decided he's their penalty takers. He's seen them probably take penalties. They probably do penalties every other day in training for the whole tournament and practiced it, and it's been there. But a crunch penalty to keep you in the game, you send Saka to take that fifth penalty. I don't know. I think Grealish said he put his hand up to take a penalty. I'm sure a couple of others might have done. But you look at Maguire, for example, for the second penalty. He steps up to it. I'm thinking, what the fuck's Maguire doing here? And I'm right behind it, and it goes straight to the top right corner. You're like, do you know what?
Fair play. Camera.
And like,
camera went off.
Yeah, but like, that's what. But I don't forgive him for putting an 19-year-old on the last penalty. And he said he took full responsibility for it this morning. And to be honest with you, I blame him for that. That's the only thing I think he got wrong. With tournament football, like, the game management and playing to still be in the game, it works in the long run. And that's why we got to the final. A lot of games where we nursed our way through and stuff like that. But yeah, like, it's just,
We got
so
better.
Close. So yeah, close.
We got better as the tournament went on. If you know, what the fuck did Rashford do? I don't know. What I don't know why he tried to fucking,
yeah,
you know, palm it with his foot, mate. He should have just fucking.
He's waiting for the keeper to go down. That's what they always do. Like how Jorginho did for when Pickford saved it. Like a lot of players wait for them to.
But that keeper is one of the best.
Yeah,
he's
well,
6'5". He's won the fucking. He's won the player of the tournament. You ain't gonna. You know, I understand why. Grealish has missed his last penalty. I mean, I think Sterling scored 2 in his last 5. You know, I understand why, but
yeah,
they should have been there. They should have gone. Yeah, Gav, I'm taking this. I want this. Yeah.
And on Rashford, like he's changed his penalty technique or something because. He's took crunch penalties for Unite before. Yeah. PSG away, I remember when they qualified for like the semi-final Champions League. He steps up to it and he's 95th minute of added time and he buries it. But he runs up to it confident and tucks it away. And he said today, like in his statement he's put on Twitter, that he didn't feel confident. And I guess if he's still putting himself forward to take a penalty, just the nerves got the better of him. That's the only thing you got to say, really.
But you've got to understand, yeah, playing club football and playing football for your country has to be completely different. You know, playing at Old Trafford in front of 90,000 fans when majority of them are your fans can't be that scary. You know, you know they're on your side. But suddenly going to Wembley and, you know, 60, 70,000, possibly more, which we'll get onto in a bit. But you just, do you know what I mean? You must have that fear of this is a different meaning. Do you know what I mean? It's not, oh, well, we might be out of a little cup or we might be, you know, we didn't get these 3 points. It's now we didn't score. We didn't win. We now restart again in September and we need to qualify for the World Cup.
That's it. How many people will be going to Hungary away in September? I'll be there. Yeah. Or how many people going to Andorra at home? Like, nah, it's one of those things, isn't it? I suppose you can't. It's England, but we're used to it, man. It's in my lifetime anyway. Germany 2006 loses to Portugal on penalties. Rooney getting sent off. Ronaldo doing the wink. 2010 loses to Germany. You know, it's England. Lose to Iceland in 2018 or 2016, whatever it was.
2016,
England, mate. Yeah, this is England, mate. This is what we're about.
It's part and parcel of the following, but off the field. I've spoken to a few people, and they reckon that there was fucking shitloads of strings there last night. Look, right, let's stay where we are. Look, jibbing at football has gone on since the day of football, right? Whether or not you agree with it, you disagree with it, it is what it is, and jibbing goes on. Everybody wants to get into things. The difference is between club and country, I suppose, yesterday and club football is that club football, people try to jump over the fence, get in because they don't want to miss a massive club game. You know, Millwall in a championship playoff game or a decider in the season, a cup game, whatever it is. Your club, you want to get in that game. If you can't get a ticket, you want to get in that game. So you're jibbing to the game, right? It is what it is. Facts. Whether or not you like it or not, it's part and parcel of football, unfortunately, as much as eating a fucking bag of chips and drinking a pint of lager. It is a part and parcel of football. You can't ever take that away. So don't try and go, oh, it's fucking bang out of order. Yeah, you might be pissed off because you paid £600-£700 a ticket and someone sneaked through the barrier, but it goes on. It's fact. But there was so many fucking strings there last night, mate. And the videos I've seen, people robbing fucking kiosks to fucking get stuff out of kiosks and, you know, and everything else, to me, just seemed fucking madness. They didn't, on a lot of the footage I've seen, they didn't even look like what I would class as football fans, if I'm honest.
Just a lot of young kids, really, like a lot of youths and stuff like that. I mean, the problem is like I bumped into a few people on the tube down, like from Baker Street I was coming back from, and like it was about 2 or 3 o'clock just before I went to the pub at the Green Man over there, and like I talked to a few people and they're like, oh yeah, we just come down for the day. What do you mean? He went, oh, we ain't got tickets, we just come down for the day to get the atmosphere and stuff like that. And I'm all for that. I do understand. Like, you see what, like, Trafalgar Square and stuff like that when we won again in the semi-finals and people surfing buses and all fucking things going on. Like, and, like, even I thought yesterday, if we win, I want to go back up London to celebrate and enjoy it into the early hours. But I think the problem is like, at Wembley, especially with Wembley Way, you're quite contained to one area. And, like, no one was asked, like, when you got off the train, if you've got a ticket or not. And they couldn't really crowd control that. So there's probably tens of thousands even, maybe, that might have been there yesterday about a ticket. And like I said, like I'm all for it, as in the atmosphere wise, but it just you get the scenes that happened, unfortunately, at the end there. I think that's what happened. Like, you know, gates getting stormed in and stuff like that. But like you say, it happens in football. Like, jibbing is definitely a thing, don't get me wrong. But like, it didn't ruin it, because like, I don't give a shit. Like, it didn't affect me directly, so I don't care. But as a whole, it definitely gives us a name that we're not about. But who cares? We're England, isn't it? Just like being
Yeah, but it's the same. You know, no one likes us. We don't care. That's the motto of Millwall. And to be fair, that's probably the motto what seems to have gone to England. That, you know, the media wanted all this. Fucking people wanted this because, you know, they wanted to. I mean, some of the stuff that was coming out on Twitter yesterday was fucking bollocks. I mean, you know, where people are going, you know, be careful, make sure you're going home in pairs and do this and do that. Listen, it's a game of football. Yeah. We lost a game of football. We don't, you know, listen, if you're an arsehole, right, or sorry, if you're a cunt, you're going to be a cunt regardless if we win, lose, or draw. It don't make you any different just because we lost a game of football. Mm-hmm. I mean, we posted something on our Twitter feed, what, probably a month or so, month and a half ago, something in line with a couple of mental health charities, just because obviously we've done a thing with the proper men's club talking about men's suicide, you know, that it's a high level, blah, blah, blah. So we posted a load of helpline numbers, right? Samaritans, you know, domestic abuse, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it just got the normal usage what it got at the time when you post it. A few people, you just, you know, you get it shared around and people know that it's there and whatnot. Fuck me, last night my phone was pinging like a fucking lunatic with people who wouldn't be following us as a football podcast, retweeting, liking, everything else, all these numbers. And you're just thinking, it's just, oh, mate, really? Why can't we ever just have a game of football and then come Monday morning, the press just go and analyse the football? Why does it always have to be, you know, the streaker on the pitch? Okay, do you know what? Fair enough, streaker on the pitch. That's what you would do. I think he fucked up. If you look at all the videos of what he did, he was running around with a T-shirt where he was trying to put on and he couldn't put it on because he was running too fast, and then he fucking dropped the thing. So whoever paid him to do that, he's fucked, because he obviously didn't put it on. And the fact that now he's going to be on a football banning order and he's going to be arrested and have a criminal offence for entering the field of play, and he's probably going to get a visit from the builder next couple of days.
He probably didn't even have a ticket, Mickey, anyway. So,
no. Yeah. But it doesn't matter. He's still nicked. He's probably going to get banned from football for the next 4 or 5 years. He'll probably have a lifetime ban at Wembley. I just think that yesterday, the only reason that people managed to get in Wembley is because Wembley security for fucking years and years and years has been shockingly shit. Mm-hmm. I mean, the last time we were there, when we had the playoffs, what was that, 2017? Mm-hmm. Going in, okay, I was in a box. I got invited into a box by a Millwall fan, Lord Kennedy, and well, I was in the box there. But you go in the proper way first, right? And then obviously you go up the extra step. But there was bods going in with big fucking bottles of beer, you know, not the little 330 mils. I'm talking pint bottles of beer in their jackets, everything else, walking through the door, walking through security, and no one bats an eyelid. And the problem is that when you pay basic wages, people don't give a fuck.
No.
So, you know, all of this happens because we've been to Wembley loads of times, and you know realistically that actually you could probably chance your luck there. You know, you could probably chance your luck and get in or do this, do that, because the old bill don't want to go nowhere near Wembley, because Wembley do not want to pay the old bill, so they stay off-site unless they get called in. And then it just leaves a free-for-all. It's a fucking security nightmare. There's so many entrances in and out to that place. It is a security nightmare. That's why they don't like club football being played there.
Mm-hmm.
I've got another show talking about the stewards and footage with a couple of crowd experts, hopefully over the next week or two. So we're going to that in more detail.
We should probably prod Kai to see how he's doing with his hangover and stuff like that, and see if it was worth it. He looks, he's been quiet today. I know he's not been brought in much, but you all right over there, Kai?
What was your drink?
I can't even remember, to be fair. I was getting bulk drinks. Like, I don't even know what it was. I was just at the club and watching the game, and people were just buying me drinks, like Guinness and stuff. And like, I've never even had Guinness before. But they were like, everyone was like, have this, have this. I was like, okay, then.
Guinness is lovely. Do you like Guinness or not really?
Well, that was quite late on. I can't remember what it tasted like now. It was all right. I think it was all right. But the first one I had was like Foster's or something, okay. Which obviously my dad's Australian, so that's an Australian drink.
But don't say to your dad that because he's Australian, he drinks Foster, because he'll probably give you a smack around the head.
He doesn't like Foster's.
No, most Australians don't, but it's like us with Carlsberg? No, Carlin. Yeah, Foster's is the equivalent of our Carlin. It's shit and piss water, but everybody else who don't live here drinks it.
I've warmed to it, though. I'll tell you what, over the tournament, because a lot of times I've been drinking it, and I've been drinking with a lot of boys from like rugby and up north and stuff. And like, yeah, I've had a few Carlins recently, so I've started to warm to it a little bit, but still not. I prefer, you know, your Stellas and your Peronis and stuff like that normally.
So, obviously, you're a bit delicate now, but before we come to the end of the show, what is your... We're going with you first, Kai, as you've been a bit suffering to a degree, quietly suffering. What's your best moment out of the tournament and your worst moment of the tournament?
Best moment would have to be when Harry Kane scored his first goal against Germany to basically wrap it up. I thought that was really special. I just thought the way that everyone had sort of doubted him over the last week, the week before, and then the way he scores basically the goal that makes it comfortable against the Germans, that was such a great win. I thought that was really special. My worst moment, well, I think it has to be the penalty miss last night, but that's nothing against Bukayo Saka, because I thought that takes huge guts to stand up and take that penalty there. And then, got so much respect for him, and it takes so much courage to take a penalty like that.
I agree. Omar?
Best moment, I think, as a general, the last 16 months we've had with COVID, and there you go, I said the COVID word, but with everything going on and, you know, being locked down, not being able to go to football, the best thing for me was, and obviously the games were great, Germany games probably the standout for me as well, like Kai said there, but just being in a crowd where there was no masks, it was all there together, having a sing-song, having a few beers in the pub beforehand, going along Wembley Way, albeit yesterday was a bit of a treacherous one, but, you know, just being back into football, what football is to me, and it's a day out with your mates, having a good laugh, and cheering on a football team that you all support. I think that's like the creme of the creme for me, and I can't wait for next season for that to come back with our beloved Millwall. Low point, yeah, the penalty miss yesterday is a sore one. I'll go for last night's penalty miss, but also drawing against Scotland and Scotland fans piping up acting like they've got 3 points off us. So there you go.
Yeah, I think the Kane goal was superb. Beating Germany was superb, but I think the Czech goal against Scotland.
Nice, good call.
I think that has to be the standout, because that was just fucking goal of the tournament. That was unbelievable. But you know what? The other thing what I think is good for this season, how many people wrote Shaw off before this tournament?
Jose said that Shaw was shy. Da, 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 da. Now he's fucking dynamite. Da, 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 da. Gareth Southgate's on the roll. Da, 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 da. Now it's fucking coming home. Da, 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 da. You know, heard that one. That's what they started singing the last couple of games. I think a United fan came up with it. Mate, good chant that. Yeah, sure, I agree with you, man. And scoring the goal yesterday topped it off for him, wasn't it?
That was a class goal. I mean, obviously, we had the benefit of watching it on telly, seeing the replays and everything else, but that was just taken so cleanly, and the fact that he just kicked it to the ground, so that it just took that slight wobble off the grass. It was just a superb goal. I mean,
should have just scored it 2 minutes before the end of the first half and not two minutes into the first half, then I'll be with you.
I think, you know, given a 19-year-old all that pressure, sticking him to take number five, realistically, Harry Kane should have either took number five, or we should have stuck fucking Maguire. To take the last one, because he was a man on a mission, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, you don't see many fucking penalty kicks like that. I mean, he broke the camera. He just literally placed it down, and it was, you could see the intent in his eyes that no fucker's going to save this. I'm just having it. And stop. You agree with the player of the tournament?
Who got it in the end? Was it
keeper?
Yeah, I'd say so. Pickford got a golden glove though, didn't he? Which is obviously a nice one for him. 5 clean sheets out of 7. Donnarumma's he's a good keeper, isn't it? But I will say, like, obviously, he saved 3 penalties, but I think, well, he saved 2 and obviously Rashford from 1. But the penalties were poor. But, you know, credit him, he still saved them.
I thought Pickford's saves were better.
100%.
Yeah. Pickford saves were class.
Yeah.
Look,
for Pickford, who's your best England player for the tournament? I think this is where this is like contentious one, right? Because my two, if I can't really separate the two, is Phillips and Rice. And yeah, they both play for Leeds and fucking West Ham. But you know what? Like, I thought Rice last night before he came off for Henderson, which was a bit of a weird one, was outstanding. And Phillips in general, all tournaments, just proved a lot of people wrong, I think, getting his place in the team. The two of them together have just been unreal in midfield for us.
And don't forget, 2 seasons ago, Rice was in the Championship.
Yeah. Or Phillips was, not Rice.
Phillips was. In the Championship. And you just think that, you know, that just shows players playing in the lower leagues that, you know, realistically anything is possible, which is good about Southgate.
Yeah.
I think over all the years previous, it's always been about the egos getting them in. And now it's about the players, what can fit the system and play the game. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, well, look, hey-ho. It's about 18 months' time and we play in Qatar. I think it is what it is. The racial abuse and everything else, what seems to have taken place over the fact that the players, the England players who didn't score, is pretty fucking disgusting, if you ask me.
Keyboard warriors hiding behind a picture. That's it. So there you go.
You know, there's loads going up. There's loads going off. You know, I've seen it, you know, stuff going off. There's a large company, I'm not going to name, who one of their employees was allegedly posting racial messages, which is under investigation. But the damage that's going to do to them is fucking madness. Hopefully the government, the police will do something about it. There is a petition being pushed around by the Millwall players, which was started by Katie Price over the abuse where her son gets online, that you need to have a verified ID to be able to open a social media account. Will it work? Will it not? It will go away in ending this. But unfortunately, a world of social media is all about being anonymous and you know, being able to hide in the shadows. I think it's a very, very small minority of people. I don't think it's massive. And I think England as a football team shows how diverse, how multicultural, the world is today. And I think it's, the way forward, I think, to a degree. And we just need to get on and support whoever's playing. I don't really look at the player's skin colour when I support England. I just support the 3 lines, what they're wearing on their shirt.
Mm-hmm. 100%, mate.
I think we're done.
Agreed.
We are.
Kai, you want to got any hangover cures or are you done?
No, I'm done. Apart from just like to say that I think this England side have brought, I think they've brought the fans a lot closer to the actual team. The stuff they've done in the communities as well. Players like Marcus Rashford, Sterling, Henderson, they've made the country proud of them again. So yeah, I'm buzzing for the World Cup and yeah, can't wait for it.
Excellent. You all done, Omar?
Yeah, just looking forward to not hearing it's coming home for 15 months, even though I'm the main culprit of it, to sing it all the time. I'm done. I think, you know what, like, I'm retiring for a little while until the 5th of August. Then we go again. So that's it.
So, yeah, well, look, there's no part 3 today. If you want a part 3, then you can make your own part 3. But we are done. Good luck to Steve Cavanagh this week, who's riding from the Den, I think it is, to Bournemouth on the Prostate Cancer Challenge. I think it's close to him. I think he lost his dad to prostate cancer. So if you do want to sponsor, the links are on, I think, the Millwall website and newsletters, what we've been begging for it. But other than that, we're done for another week. Thank you very much for joining us. Remember, 5-star review. You can find us across all social media just using our handle, which is That Millwall Pod. That's me, Omar and Kai. We're done for another week. We're fucking off. Enjoy your rest of the week and speak to you next week.
There's a highway that stretches across the 93 days of summer, where worship isn't offered to the sun, but to the smoking tire, the S-curve, and the spin turn. And if you ride it, make sure you do it in a Dodge Charger, Challenger, or Durango. Because on this highway, the lines being blurred are the ones between drivers and demons. Welcome to Highway 93. Dodge is a registered trademark.
Progressive is America's number one motorcycle insurer, so we understand motorcycles. No, really, we have a bike translator.
Okay, so this bike says she is struggling with her place in the motorcycle community. Well, she says she hasn't peaked yet, but she's having a little epiphany, okay. Oh, that maybe life itself is the peak. Interesting. In my experience, I found that... That's why I just translate. Not allowed to have opinions. Got it.
Quote with Progressive and see if you could save with America's number one motorcycle insurer. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.